It's time for today's episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast, recorded in front of a slightly tipsy studio audience at world-famous Champy's Fried Chicken. We will have the latest on Georgia Bulldogs football, basketball, and recruiting. Watch live and send us your questions on the 11 Alive Sports page on Facebook. Be advised, this podcast is off the record and not safe for work. Also, be sure to subscribe to the UGA Sports Live Podcast on iTunes and Google Play.
Everybody, welcome to the UGA Sports Live Podcast here from Champy's on Baxter Street, home of the Taco Tuesday.
Taco Tuesday, margarita specials tonight, soul food tomorrow, Wednesday, that starts at 5. Thursday's wing specials.
Oh, that's good.
And then Friday they're doing crawfish, low country boil.
There's a lot going on at Champy's, including the UGA Sports Live Podcast with your host, Roddy DeBulsey, Jake Roos, Jim Donnan, and a cast of characters out there listening to the show, including Tim, the man, Pinnell. So we got a lot of folks here watching the show, and we appreciate that. For all of you tuning in, thank you for tuning in each week. We really appreciate it. We do this show every Tuesday at noon, unless it's a Wednesday or Monday or whenever we need to change it up. But we try to do it every Tuesday at noon. We got a lot to talk about. You know, one of the funny things we're 2 weeks removed from G-Day, and we never talked about the quarterbacks.
I keep realizing that at the end of every one of these. I'm like, when are we going to talk about that?
We got so much stuff to talk about, we can never keep up with it. Jake will have some recruiting updates for you. But what we really want to do is answer your questions. That's the whole point of the show, is for you to ask us questions and to have Coach Don and the expert here answer them for you. Jake and I drink beer and eat food while Coach does all the work. It's a great system. I love it. It's probably the most ingenious thing we've ever come up with, is to get him to work for free while we eat food. So it's awesome.
I like it.
Like I said, we want to thank Champions for letting us come in here. And just real quick, want to mention 11 Live Sports. We are on their webpage. If you are watching this, even if you're not watching it, you're listening to it while you're working out, do another set. And when you get back home, like the 11 Live Sports page. A big shout-out to Athens Ford. They're a huge sponsor of our show. And the website, UGASports.com. So we can't do this without Athens Ford. So swing by there. Pick up a new vehicle. And I tell you what, if you go out there and buy a new vehicle and you let me know about it, I will give you 1 year of UGA Sports, a subscription to UGA Sports for 1 year for free.
Wow.
You just let me know that you bought a vehicle out there, new or pre-owned. And here's the thing. If you get one from them, you know it's going to come with that lifetime powertrain warranty, which you can't get anywhere else. Even a pre-owned vehicle. So if you get one that's under 80,000 miles, you can get the lifetime powertrain warranty on it. It doesn't have to be a Ford. It'll be any of their vehicles. They will take care of you. That's the type of service Athens Ford does for you. They're the only Ford dealership in Athens. People ask me, they're like, where are they? And if you know where Sam's is, you know where that Sonic is on the west side of town before you get to the mall, coming up from Atlanta, which is it's not that long a drive if you're going to save the kind of money that those guys save you. Swing by Athens Ford and pick up a new truck, Ford F-150, get that Ford Escape, the Explorer. Everything they got up there. The Fusion that we took down to the Masters, that was a great ride, great driving car. I know that my buddy Mark is going to probably give that to his son. And his son's a good ways from driving, so he knows it's going to last a long time. So very nice vehicle there. So swing by Athens Ford. We're going to jump right in the show, but I do want to give a quick shout-out to Yurpai. Thanks for a great Friday afternoon last week. Academia Brewing. You notice we got the Academia beers out here. I have the Dome Kolsch, which is just a magnificent beer. And you've got the IQ IPA.
As always, well, baby. I love it.
Consistent.
Sorry, we have to have a little pause there. I'll get a little swig of beer in me. Shout out to Cable East and Robert Wall out in Statham and 365 Game Day. We'll mention these sponsors later in the show so you can go partake of their services. So, anyway, Coach, we somehow made it 2 weeks without talking about what everybody else was talking about because, you know, we don't do what everybody else does, but we never mentioned the quarterbacks at G-Day. And my kind of overall impression was I didn't care for everyone looking at Jake Fromm going 19 of 38, and that's only 50%, you know. I thought that the defensive backs had a good day. I thought that the offensive line, there were some breakdowns in coverage. There was a lot of sacks. And I thought that Justin Fields is what we knew he was going to be. I mean, he's a five-star. You got 2 5-stars going head-to-head. I didn't walk away going, oh, Fields is better or Fromm is bad. I just walked away going, hey, that defense had a good day. That's just my take.
Yeah, I think the overall me watching it and having a chance to watch a couple practices, just the fact that that both these guys really have good awareness, have a good feel for the what they're doing. And when you look at the construction of the game, the way it was set up, you know, ones versus ones, and very limited running game, because really when you have a lot of running game, that's where you have a chance for most injuries. So it's basically, you know, a passing type situation there. You know, you're playing without Swift and you're playing with really basically two scholarship backs. So it was a lot easier to have the, you know, the line being focused on pass protection. So, and they didn't run a lot of RPOs where they had runs involved where they were reading it. So I just think real quickly a capsule here, giving you the Jim Donnan theory on what happened there, as I think challenging to Jake and the fact that they didn't really run the ball. He was throwing and they were really rushing the passer pretty well with some four and five man combinations, and they played a lot better with playing the ball in the air, even though he had a couple drops. But you know, it's a given with Jake. He's going to be there every week. He knows what to do. He can run the club, and he's very prolific in his ability to get everybody in the right spot and just do what he did last year, which was outstanding. As far as Justin, you know, the fact they had the quick whistle hurt him a little bit, and the fact that he could have gotten away several times.
Yes.
And they didn't really focus on many deep throws by him because really I think they were worried about the protection with the second line, you know, a little bit. If the second D knows that they're throwing a lot, they're not going to. So he played essentially with four of his five linemen were either redshirt or true freshmen. He played without a scholarship back. Played with the second and third receivers and really looked pretty good. So we got a great situation there. I think it'll come, you know, the fall camp will have a lot to do with it, just like it did last year. You know, we came out of fall with – into fall thinking about Jake was going to challenge Eason, and, you know, he wasn't able to beat him out. Now we're going to see what happens in the fall here. Can Justin come in there and do the job? So it's a tremendous situation as far as – those two guys, and I'm excited about what both of them bring to the table.
I wanted to ask you, Coach, one thing that I've had a lot of people kind of ask me about in regards to this quarterback situation. I don't even want to call it a battle, but the idea that, you know, how much does what Jake did last year kind of embolden your trust in him and what he's able to do in those situations? Does that matter? I mean, when you're comparing those things, he does – Kirby always says, it's a new year. We're turning over the page. This is a different team. But do the things that Jake did last year have some –
Well, you earn that trust and you build up some equity based on the fact that he made so many good decisions, far outweighing any bad ones that he had. And, you know, you're going to have – every quarterback throws interceptions. Every quarterback has bad decisions. I mean, I don't care who you are, but I think – You know, Brett Favre leads the world in interceptions, but that's because he threw so many good passes. He got to throw them. But I think the thing about it with our schedule, even though we do have a tough road game early there at Columbia and another one maybe at Missouri just because it's on the road, our schedule sets up good for whoever the quarterback is to develop a lot of confidence, you know, playing some of these lesser teams and, you know, really getting a chance to develop some of these backs. That, you know, question mark a little bit on our backs here, you know, with the fact that even though these guys are highly rated, we're going to have to see them come in and do the job. You know, we feel good about the two that have played a lot in Harrion and Holyfield, but Swift has done so many good things, but he's still going to have to come off this injury a little bit and be ready. So two of our top, say, four backs are coming off injury situation there with you know, and White, they say he's had a tremendous spring practice. So I just believe that, and having coached quarterbacks over the years and having guys that have gotten a lot better or have gotten a lot worse depending on what happens, you know, what's the ceiling for Jake and what's the ceiling for Justin? How much better are each one going to get? And I think what that's going to be the situation here. Sometimes a guy after his freshman year peaks out, and I'm not typecasting Jake, but I'm saying what's the ceiling for both of them, and I think that's what Kirby's got to look at. Who can help your team win the quickest and be the more the guy that can do the job. But some of these people that talk about, and it's nothing against them, that's why you have your your boards and everything, but to talk about, hey, let's just get a package for Justin, and hey, I'm going to tell you what, he is the package. He can do whatever you want. So when he goes in there, he's going to have his own offense, just like Jake. They're both going to run the same offense. They're not going to have certain plays just for Justin and all that. I mean,
well,
going to be all within the. And you know, somebody said, "Hey, well, we could play him at wide receiver." Oh, hey, God. That guy needs to go over to Iran and think about the pack today. What Trump's going to say when you talk about Justin Fields playing wide receiver? Come on, man.
Well, see, my thought though. And this is not to say that you put in, you know, Justin in a package deal. My thought was where they are on the field. You know, we've seen in the past when you had two quarterbacks, and I remember Rick doing this. You know, he's like, okay, you know, DJ, you got the third series no matter where we are on the field. He did it by the first two, you know, are going to, you know, my starting quarterback, second, third one goes to this one, you know. We've seen guys – it's third down, they bring in a different quarterback. All the different quarterback rotations we've seen throughout the years. My theory, just based on nothing but a guess, was we've seen how well Jake Fromm leads a team down the field. And then whenever they got near the red zone, Jim Chaney loved to go that wild dog thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw direct snaps to Sony Michel, Nick Chubb, Mecole Hardman, Terry Godwin. And then that's when we started to see Jake Fromm running the ball. You know, tuck it and run. And some of those were, you know, he's sure. going to run it. Yep. It was obvious. So it seems to me like once he gets down close to the red zone, he kind of switches to that. So my thought there was, what a perfect time to bring in Justin Fields.
Yeah, I think that makes sense along the lines that, you know, you have your goal line packages a lot of times where people will bring in jumbo people and bring in an extra tight end or extra lineman.
Oh, yeah, they did that a few times.
So I'm saying you could have that package where, you know, you bring in Justin who adds the element of a better runner than Jake and, you know, have
and
some –
a better passer than the other guys.
Have some predetermined – yeah, I mean, the other guys you're talking about. But a predetermined quarterback runs of which you have the quarterback counter, the quarterback draw, the outside zone, you know, a lot of different runs that a lot of these spread teams are utilizing with their quarterback, and we haven't seen those in the scrimmages or in G-Day, but I'm sure that's in Coach Chaney and Coach Smart's package, because Kirby knows, having had to defend that over the years at Alabama and now here, that's very difficult. That brings another challenge to you. So it's just a deal that we've talked about on this show, and I've said it every year. The 29 practice opportunities that you have in fall camp really separate the meat and potatoes of every team, because you have 15 practice opportunities in the spring, of which 10 maybe are, you know, really – physical practice where you have pads, three non-pads, and a couple scrimmages, but you're really going to see a whole lot more in the fall as far as what the whole role is going to be and then the competitiveness of it. And then you add these 17 guys that are coming in here on May 31st to the mix that may be going to give us some immediate help in some areas we need that, you know, whether it be Cook or Adamson or whoever it might be or the linebackers, but that you add those to this team, then I think it's going to really gel pretty quickly.
We've got several questions rolling in, and we do want to take as many of your questions as we can get to
today.
Let's
get them.
So feel free to send any in. One of the questions, though, since we just were talking about the quarterbacks, our friend Justin Fox, he says, I'm interested to see if Ridley can build off of that national championship game and explode this year. What are your thoughts on this wide receiver group? We obviously have the quarterbacks to throw it. Now we should have the wideouts to catch it.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the receivers, not only from the standpoint of ability to run, but they've increased their toughness just because of the way they've practiced working on blocking on the perimeter and making the defense work on getting off blocks and play tackles. Like we've talked about how good our team practices against each other. But, you know, Terry Godwin is a blue-chip receiver. I mean, not just because of one-hand catches, but I think he'll be able more of a go-to guy this year in the clutch. And also, you know, where we had Wims last year. And I think Ridley gives you a guy on the edge that can really go up and get it and go deep. And then Miko, you know, two touchdowns in the national championship game. Not many guys can ever say that in their whole career. So And then you had Holloman, and you had these other guys. I think was Jason Stanley, whoever it might be. I just think this receiver core is really good, and it's going to be enhanced with the guys we got coming in. But these guys are capable of what you like in college football and the difference. And I'll get to this real quickly. Last year we talked about how much we struggled to make any big plays, and that was why we didn't make a lot of first downs, because you stop yourself, you make penalties and do stuff. But last year we made a lot of big explosive runs and explosive passes, and that really enhanced our offense. And I think this team is going to be even more explosive from the standpoint of home run type plays that we can have. And you saw several of those in the G-Day game.
Yeah. Roddy, I want to ask you, I think Ridley, Godwin, Hardman, most people expecting that to probably be your three going from day one.
Right.
Who's the guy behind them that you think could surprise some people?
I don't know. I know who you want me to say.
Is it Matt Landers?
No, you want me to say Jeremiah Holloman. You've been telling me about Holloman for 4 years.
I like Holloman. I like Landers. I mean, I think all these guys are – and you go ahead and answer it, but that was a retort.
You know, and here's the thing. And, again, and I said this last year, and it didn't happen. So I'm 0 for 1 in this same question. But I like a senior.
Okay.
I like Jason Stanley.
Okay.
I think that with his back to the wall, his last chance to make an impression, and I base that on the fact that, you know, his in-game production the last 2 years has not been good.
Sure.
And Jason will be the first to tell you that. He doesn't sugarcoat it.
But good on special teams, though.
Great on special teams. He's one of the fastest guys. We always see him running that jet sweep, you know.
Yep.
He's lightning fast. But I heard great things about him this spring. And I think if this is a guy who's put it together with a new wide receivers coach, that's not to take anything away from James Coley, but, you know, maybe Cortez Hankton has taught him or caught something that he was doing that didn't show out. Now, I know he had a he laid out for a catch in the G-Day game. He couldn't quite reach, you know, and a lot of people are like, oh, man, there's Jake Stanley again. I thought the fact that he got his hands on that ball was impressive. You know, a lot of guys wouldn't even gotten to it. But – again, I just think there are some fantastic young players coming in who should make a big impact.
And look at Matt Simmons.
Tyler Simmons. Yeah, that guy has.
Was he onside?
We actually just got a comment that says Tyler Simmons was not offside. That's from our buddy Chuck Ward.
And Tyler, we did a huge story about how, you know, he got chewed out in a game and then literally seemed like a different player going forward and has made play after play after play. And, again, that was a true track star. That is a guy who absolutely killed it. It was who was out there? Mike Bobo and Kirby Smart were watching him at a track meet in Jefferson.
Yeah.
When he came around the corner in a 4x100, he was the third leg. And he looked like a 26-year-old man.
Yes.
You know,
he closed some ground real quick,
he
too.
He did. And this is against the fastest guys in the state. And I saw Kirby make a beeline to where he was after he'd handed off the
where's
baton.
That kid going?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't lose sight of him.
So he went over there to get him. But, and again, I've been wrong with my Jason Stanley prediction before, but I'm going to stick with it because I just think from what I heard this spring, he was catching a lot more and that senior. And I do want to touch on something the coach said. We saw that Michael Chigbu had been in the game, you know, for his blocking abilities, not so much for his catching ability. Jason Stanley, too, when Georgia was running it heavily 2 years ago, you know, those guys were out there. And people kept saying, bring in the other guys. You know, but Georgia was a running team. And at one point, they were running 60% of the time. Even higher than that, wasn't it? Hey, Dad, Dave, how much were they Georgia's running? I think they were close to 69%. Anyway, point being, coach talks about these guys getting toughness, and you just kind of glossed over that. But when you look at someone like Terry Godwin, who was not – he was a bad blocker. Let's call it what it was. He was not a good blocker on the edge.
Well, he'd never been asked to before.
Exactly. Now that guy is very physical, and that was a mindset change on him. So I don't even know that you're going to have to go past those first three.
And you got the weight room development.
Yeah,
you had all that together.
He's put on pounds and put on an attitude of anger, and he hits. Tyler Simmons will light you up, but Jason Stanley being that senior who's been blocking for 4 years – now he's got the chance to make some catches. So Jason Stanley will be my guy. But love Tyler Simmons. Want to see what Matt Landers can do. And I know Jeremiah Holloman, who's proven that he's got the ability. Anyway, like to the question's point, there are a lot of great wide receivers in this group. And I think, as Coach pointed out at the beginning of the show, I don't like a situation where the defense knows they're going to throw it. And that's kind of what hurt the Georgia quarterbacks when you look at their stats this past G-Day game. But when you're an opposing defense and you look in the backfield and you see that they've got Holloman, Holyfield, and Swift and hopefully Zamir White, you know, James Cook and Herrien. And then you're looking at the wide receivers out there. That's a dangerous group.
I agree. But we're not going to throw 38 passes in a game.
Yeah, never.
Seriously, I mean, we're not going to do that. I mean,
but you're going to throw more this year than you did last year.
Maybe we will, but still, we're not going to throw 38. I mean, you call that many, but I think that was a situation.
Especially with that offensive line.
That was set up to. It was a good show for 78,000 or 82,000, whatever you had. That was the whole deal. Let them see it, but. I'd have to say that anybody that watched that's got to be impressed with the talent level. And you look at the guys we lost that were introduced and the guys that were introduced that we got coming in. Yeah. Makes you want to go to Champions on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday this week. To celebrate.
What did they just put out in front of us?
So we got the chicken melt, which is, if you haven't been out here for lunch, got to get that thing.
My catfish melt.
I think the best sandwich in the city of Athens right this second is that chicken melt. That catfish press
it's close.
Is excellent
it's
as
close.
Well. It's right there.
I noticed what they brought you to your favorites.
Yeah. That's nice.
We got to. You know,
I need my tamales.
And then, you can come get some with your tacos tonight.
They got tacos tonight, Taco Tuesday.
Absolutely.
Right? So, what's the next question here? We got to get some.
I wanted to jump in with one guy though that I think could possibly make a splash this year. I think that's Trey Blunt. I think that he's I think he's a guy who's been a little forgotten about because Trey was a kid in high school and pretty true, I think, of his career to this point. It's not like he does one thing spectacularly. He's not a total burner. He's not a one-hand catch guy. But what he is a solid every-down receiver with a willingness to block, great hands, and a good route runner. And I think that And I think he's a kid who can make an impact. He can get in there. And if nothing else, he's going to be a hard guy to account for other teams on the field.
And that's a good point, too. You need depth, but it also enhances your special teams to have guys like that. And I think – realistically, though, most good teams aren't playing 8-10 receivers. I mean, you're playing three or four.
Yeah, those three, it might be tough to get past those.
It's just not a situation where you're going to have – it's hard enough to find one really outstanding SEC-caliber receiver, and then if you got three, that's really awesome. But, we got a good situation at tight end, too, which – we can JoJo.
We're not allowed to throw to the tight ends.
Well,
remember?
Hey, let's don't get them. We can JoJo our tight ends around. Now we can put them.
Is JoJo Latin for not throwing to them?
No. Hey, that was just a situation the last year where, you know, we didn't need to. But I mean, you just like to get somebody chapped there. Kirby just texted me that he said you said that again. No, but seriously,
Dave pointed out Georgia did run it 68.7% of the time.
That's pretty close to 69.
Yeah, exactly. I'm taking credit for that one.
But our tight ends can enhance the wide receivers because you can go with two tight ends in the game, and one of them can split out or one of them can flex, and that gives you the same look defensively where you can't roll some guys down to a small situation with the safety down low or high. So I think the flexibility we got with offense is, you know, it's like going to a buffet, you know, where do you start? We got a lot of different areas to work with, and we got a really good offensive line that's very competitive as far as who the starters are going to be there too. So, you know, question marks are going to prevail all spring and fall about what we're going to talk about, what we don't have. But I would say – every team in America, except maybe two or three, would like to change roles with us right now. As far as personnel.
I don't think it's going out on a limb to say Georgia should average 35 points a game.
I don't think so. No, I mean, no.
With that offensive line, those behemoths up there.
Is that based on the schedule or based on their team?
Based on the team.
I think a little bit of both, personally.
Well, yeah, and then we look at the schedule. There's some teams you should beat 49-0.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and that's after calling off the dogs. But
who beside Tennessee and Florida?
That was what 87-3 or something.
I just threw that in there.
Real quick, and then I want to jump over here. Chuck Ward asks real quick. He says, you know, what we were just talking about with these receivers. Does Tommy Bush end up with a red shirt because you don't go that deep on the chart this year? I think that's possible.
Yeah, I think Tommy Bush. You got to look at though.
Matt Landers did.
You got to look at Tommy coming in like Wims. Is he going to be a guy you can throw the back shoulder fade? Can he go deep? You know, he's a very highly recruited guy. And, you know, we're just talking about the people on the team right now. But like I said, those 17 guys coming in, you know, Sal, you're, I mean, what are you going to do the first day? I'm going to guarantee you, I hope I'm over in the training room when that sucker walks in. I'm going to try to find out when he's getting his physical, because I'm going to break him down.
You need a kerchief so you can wipe all that drool
off.
No,
I'm just going to – I want to see that. I mean
– I could see him calling Ron Corson, did I leave my keys in here? Oh, hey, there's Jamar.
No, I would never do that, but I mean – I'm just
yeah,
just, it just makes you feel good, you know. And I talked on our show about Terrence Edwards, who helps over there at Pace. I saw him over here in the spring, and he was talking about what a great kid Jamari was, and you know how well coached he was, and how college ready he thought he was. And coming from a guy that's played here and knows what it takes, I think that's pretty good idea about what Salyer can do. And we'll see. He's going to have some competition because these guys have been working out and got a head start on him, but they had a head start on Thomas too.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking of having a head start, we want to give you a head start on everything going down at Academia this week.
Yes. Like I said, this dome course is just phenomenal. A couple things going on over there. They've got a new Honey Blonde Ale at the bar. You should go ahead and try that. If you like Honey Blonde Ales, can't imagine how good that is. I will be over there Thursday night to check that out. Then on the Thursday night at the Athens Area Arts Council, there's going to be music, local artists, White Rabbit Collective, the Pierres, and there's going to be a silent auction for a ton of Athens Area business and artists. The proceeds and a portion of all food and beverage sales after 5 p.m. will go back to the council. They use these funds to help artists, arts, nonprofits, and community art projects like the Art Deco installation and the Clayton Street parking deck downtown.
Cool.
So go over on Thursday night for the Athens Area Arts Council. That's a huge percentage night. The percentage of – and when they do percentages, they don't do like, oh, you get 1% of our sales. No, they do a huge – it's in all caps. And Friday, a touring group of Nashville artists, including the Nordista Freeze, whose music has been compared – to the style of Tom Petty, they're coming through the Bew Pub for a late night show. They're going to play from 8 till about 11.
Okay,
so,
awesome.
Friday, if you want to swing by over there. And remember, Mondays, go by and get this great wing night.
Yeah.
Right. After 5 o'clock.
Wing night at Academia Monday, Thursday night at Champions.
Yeah.
You got your wing set for the week.
And you know what? They got a Honey Blonde Ale worth.
We need to have a convention here so everybody comes in town's on expense account and go to all these different places we're advertising. And they wouldn't have, I mean, just, hey, let's have a UGA scam convention where we just talk about everything that's going on at UGA. And we'll meet one night at Champions, one night at Academia, one afternoon at Your Pie.
Absolutely. You know, we did have a lot of people that came in for G-Day. I thought the 4 o'clock start was perfect because we had a lot of people that came here for lunch and then went by Academia or Your Pie for dinner or vice versa. So shout out to all you people that watch the show and hit up two of our sponsors.
How about you going under different guys out there to Academia, acting like you're a graduate?
Yes, yeah.
Three different times you went in there with a cap and gown.
Had a mustache on one time.
That was pretty cool, them giving a beer if you graduate.
Yeah,
you know?
I thought that was phenomenal. And congratulations to all the new University of Georgia graduates. There are people waking up this morning, hopefully with very good job prospects.
At least you didn't get pulled off the stage like Florida.
If I had walked across the stage, they would have had to DDT me to get me off the stage. I'd have been stuck there dancing around. I mean, there's no way I'd have gotten off.
Did you see where that guy was interviewed? I'm having a couple French fries here to go. Where the guy was interviewed on the Florida site, kind of similar to yours, when he was talking about Incognito, but he was talking about how the weight program has improved under the new staff compared to the old, but he's also bagging about where they lived on campus, that nobody ever takes them to where they live and all because they're so bad and all. So hey, any recruits out there, check out when you go to Florida, tell them to show you where they live and all, because even their own players are bagging on it. Well, that's negative recruiting.
That is negative
best,
recruiting.
Right?
There you go. Well, I will say this, I remember for a while there, when, you know, and we've been doing this for some time, when we would talk to recruits about Georgia, they would rave about the East Campus dining hall. And
it's
they
good.
Go in, because, you know, it was all you could eat.
Convenient, too.
They'd come out there and say, yeah, I had like 4 steaks. And then they had the person making custom made milkshakes. I had like 3 of those. And then we talked to the parents, and the parents would say, I love their dorms, that East Campus Village. and they would rave about the place the kids were going to stay. A lot of the kids are like, look, this is better than where I live now.
You like that.
You know?
Better than where so I live
now. So now we got the training table, and we got the food to go area, the bags to go, and all that stuff around. I mean, guys can eat 24/7.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's unbelievable. And
they need to improve it, though. You were telling us that they need to.
We need an area where, you know, it's not where it's just access for the athletes, you know, and we can control it a little better. I'd like to get that along with the weight room, but we're making progress. You know, there's a lot of different things going on.
All right, we got a question here from our guy Brian Murphy. He says, will we see more transfers? And I guess some of that has to do with, obviously, Georgia's lost a few guys along the way. Pat Allen, we just found out, landing at Southeastern Louisiana.
Is that where he's going?
Yes, it is,
good.
Actually.
Good for
but
him.
All about competition over at UGASports.com this morning, as Georgia added a grad transfer punter, Landon Stratton. Out of
Murray State Racers.
Yeah, Murray State. Okay, so.
The Racers.
You know, are we going to see some more of that? I mean, do you think it's done? Or
no, I suspect two more.
Oh.
Two more guys will leave or two more
will
come?
Two more will leave.
All right, we'll see. But I think the one thing we've known since Kirby has shown his ability to implement the squad, you know, where starting back when he brought in Smith and Catalina and all these guys, and then last year. So, you know, a punter looking at our situation feels like he got a shot, you know.
He does
and
have
I,
a shot.
I think in this case, I don't know, I would think he's probably a preferred walk on. I don't know that he's getting a scholarship. He could be, he could earn one, but, and then, you know, we got Kamarja coming in who has a good record, but. Competition's good. I mean, it makes you better. And Long's going to have to step it up, you know, if he's going to win the job. And if he wins it, more power to him. But, you know, you want to put pressure on all your players to perform. And you look at as good as we played on offense, as good as we played on defense, our improvement in the special teams last year was monumental. Coverage, kicking, everything about it was just A-plus compared to the year before.
Oh, complete difference. At one point, Georgia was amongst the worst three punting teams in the nation, and very bad when it comes to kick coverage. So their special teams were not just bad for the SEC, but, I mean, like when you're in the – I think there's 128 teams and you're like 124, you know, that's not exactly where Georgia wants to be. Then all of a sudden, they're near the top. Not even mid-range, not even 60,
same thing
70.
With red zone.
Yeah, they jumped to the top. They were terrible in the red zone 2 years ago. Then they're one of the best teams in the nation the following year. They improve special teams. They improve red zone. And all of a sudden, they're playing for a national title. And they go into – they're winning the game until the very last play. So that changes everything. But I think to the question about transfers, there are some guys who have been recruited over. You knew that Chris Barnes was kind of a reach when you took him in. You know, he wasn't the biggest guy, wasn't the fastest guy. But, I mean, definitely a good player. When they switched him to defense this year, because they obviously need defensive players, I didn't think that was going to go sit well with him. And now he's transferred. And, you know, good luck to Chris Barnes. Good luck to Pat Allen. But a lot of players on offense and defense, there's some defensive linemen who've kind of been recruited over.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And, yeah, you hear about those guys right at spring practice ends. We knew a couple of them were coming. But I've heard rumors about a couple more, and there are guys who are going home, you know, because the semester's over, and, you know, they're talking it over with their families. So, and again, they may not happen, but I know that there's some – and here's the thing. It's not – this isn't a Kirby thing. I mean, this happened under Jim Donna. This happened under Mark
always
Rick.
You're always going to have one or two. And, you know, your job as a coach is to develop your players, and you know, if they don't develop as good as they should, then it's up to you to level with them. Say, hey, we're not going to take your scholarship, but hey, this is a situation right now, and we'll give you a shot, but more than likely you're not going to be playing anywhere what we thought you were. And so the reality is, hey, is the guy just want to stay here and be part of the team, get his degree, or does he want to go somewhere and have an opportunity? And there's always that if factor when you do leave, what makes you think you're going to play somewhere else? So, stunning reality sometimes that, you know, maybe you're not quite as good as you thought you were going to be, but that's not anybody's fault. Hey, that's the way it is. So, but our level of talent right now is getting it, making it very tough unless you're really really the real deal. Hard to get on the field here right now.
All right, I'm going to lump this question together. We got two that I think fit pretty nice. Chuck Ward and Ronnie Brown, both of them asking about running backs. Chuck says, everybody mentions having Swift and Zeus at running back. Do you think, Coach, that people are overlooking Elijah Holyfield? And then to play off that, Ronnie Brown says, which one of these freshman running backs do you think will have the biggest impact this year, Cook or White?
Well, the general tendency is always talk about the unknown more than the known, but we got a really good given in the fact that Harrion and Holyfield are two really good SEC backs that you know can go in there and make yards, can pass protect, not get nervous and make mistakes, and they have the ability to be good, solid SEC players. Swift has done the same thing with his opportunity last year in different situations, maybe using him more as a special type player coming out of the backfield or running off tackle or whatever it might be. But they definitely have the ability. But when you got two guys that are highly recruited, like the number one running back in the country, a back that and White, who ran a 10-400 meters as a high school senior. I mean, come on. I mean, junior, because he would have been a senior this year. So, and then you got Cook, who, you know, everybody talks about his brother, but he made his own niche down there in South Florida too. So, I think it's just going to be both of these guys are going to have to, Cook and Zeus are going to have to show what they can do. And to a certain extent, Swift too, because he was more not an every down guy last year, and now he's coming off of an injury where hopefully, you know, he's going to be okay and we can count on him. So I think we got a really good situation as far as potential there, but all these guys are going to have, now that it's your shot and you don't have those two bell cow guys, I mean, how are you going to handle it? So we got a good group to draw from there.
Speaking of how are you going to handle it, I think that one thing we definitely need to talk about on this week's show, because it was probably the story of the week last week, is Kirby Smart and his big fat contract extension. A lot of money, a lot of years. 7 years, a compensation package worth $49 million. A lot of cash on that. Just your thoughts, your take on, you know, where all that sits. How did it sit with you to see him get that raise?
It is what the market pays, and I've always been a guy that says, hey, the market determines salaries. Now, at some point, and I mentioned this on Twitter, and I think it brought it home to a lot of people, Kirby Smart's making $19,000 a day. Now, he works every day. Don't get me wrong. This is not a guy who, hey, well, football season is only 3 months. You know, that guy works ridiculous hours every day. I get it. I don't want to work that hard. I'd love to be paid that much, but I don't work that hard. And I get the folks say, no human being that does what he does, you know, be it him, you know, Nick Saban, you know, Dabo Swinney, nobody's worth that. Again, and, you know, then we saw that Matt Ryan's getting $30 million for 1 year of playing football. I get it. But here's the thing. It's what the market pays. You're underpaid. I'm overpaid. Coach Don is working for nothing, you know. The market.
You seem like you could take care of
it. Hey, you know, you pay peanuts, you get monkeys.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's my point. You know,
but seriously,
here's the thing. If you didn't pay him what he's worth, and here's the thing, Kirby Smart loves Georgia, and this is the job he wanted. He waited for it. He had the opportunity to come and take it previously. He waited for it. He got it. He took Georgia to a place it hadn't been in 30-something years. So he's definitely worth being paid what the top coaches in the market are worth. So, again, I don't care if it was $100 million. I don't care if it was $100,000. He needs to be paid what he's worth. The market pays that. So if anybody's mad about the amount of money he's making, take that up with society. Take that up with the people that watch football.
Take that up with
all the people that wear the G logos. It's a multi-billion-dollar business. He is worth what you're paying him. It's money well spent. And even if it was just a fluke year last year, what he's put in the recruiting, what he's made of your roster – is worth $7 million a year. Because when is Georgia recruited like that?
Facility enhancement, recruiting, whatever it might be.
Culture change.
But I think the main thing is you talked about the climate, but, you look at the market and what your competition's doing, and, you know, when you saw Malzahn get the 7, you saw Mullen get 6 at Florida, I mean, and the agent that represents 12 of the guys in the 14 represents Kirby. He knows exactly what's going on. And – Well, let's face it, and anybody on this deal right here on our blog or whatever we're on, 11 Live Sports Facebook, you know, realistically, these pro teams, they're going to come after Kirby.
Yep.
I'm telling you, he's too good a coach.
College teams will.
And there'll probably be somebody there. I don't know who it might be. You know, they talk about Nick, what's going to happen there. But I think you base everything a little bit on performance and also tying somebody down. And that's a good contract. It's a good move both ways by McGarity and Dr. Moorhead to lock him up from that standpoint. But it also shows a real sense of symbolism that we're supporting and we're going to do what's necessary to make Georgia relevant, kind of like what you know, everybody talks about building the new facilities and all that. We got to continue to do that. But it is a driven market, and it shows the recruits out there. You know, I saw Nolan Smith say, hey, well, I'm going to be here for the 7 years. I mean, yeah. They see that, too.
Yes, they do.
But, you know, people use that against you, too. I mean, they say, hey, my coach is making $7 million, you're making $3 million. But realistically, he loves Georgia. His family's here. His wife, you know, all that stuff. But I think it's a good reward. And, you know, it's something that last year at this time we were talking about, hey, well, what's going to happen with Kirby? You know, he's got 3 years left, 4 years on. So, but
And wasn't recruiting worth a damn to.
So
to
it will. It's a show me situation every year, though.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think the 7 years is very significant, though. I mean, that's a strong commitment by everybody.
I like to point out that the reason you pay him top market dollar, because somebody else will.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why I was saying Kirby loves Georgia. And if you think that as much as Kirby loves Georgia, you could not have a Texas A&M FSU situation.
Sure.
Where Jimbo Fisher is FSU. But then Texas A&M comes with one of the most ridiculous contracts I've ever seen.
$75 million.
Yeah. How do you turn that down? And now Kirby's got kids. And he's like, well, you're making $3.8 million. Your kids are taken care of. But he's like, I could take care of my kids' kids.
Right.
If I'm making $7 million. And, you know, as much as I love Georgia, if another school is willing to double my salary, he would be a fool not to take
Kirby
it.
Kirby loves Georgia. He's not an idiot. He's not a dummy.
That's what I was trying to say, folks.
I love working.
The shorter version of it.
Listen, I love working at UGASports.com. If you will double my salary, I will leave tomorrow.
I'll kick you out. I'll be like, you're dead. We say the same thing about guys going pro.
But a lot of guys don't make moves necessarily for money. But when you talk about that kind of move, like what Jimbo did, I mean that was a big commitment by certainly. Texas A&M.
But Kirby wouldn't leave if somebody's paying him an extra $100,000. You know, so, and again, he's worth it. If Malzahn's getting $7 million, he should get $7 million. He went head-to-head with Malzahn, lost once, beat him once. Beat him in the bigger game. Went ahead with Nick Saban, you know, took him down to the wire, was almost the first guy to ever beat him, took him to overtime. If Mullen can get $6 million at Florida, and Kirby's going to be 3.8? No, that's unacceptable. When you pants Florida and you what Jeremy Pruitt, I think, has a salary closer to what?
Three and a half. But here's a point. Again, Jimmy Sexton drives the market, too.
I mean,
you know, last year they're talking to Kirby about South Carolina, 2 years ago about South Carolina. Then Kirby jumps in on this job, and he gets Muschamp in on the South Carolina job. This year he's got Mullen getting ready to interview at Tennessee, and then Florida – situation opens up because Frost is out and he puts Mullen in there and then he brings Pruitt in there and he also got Coach Tucker an interview there. I mean, the guy is a
What you need. You need him as your rep.
Yeah, I need to get Jimmy Sexton getting my contract going with you.
Yeah, then we can get you paid right.
I agree with what we've done as far as the commitment to that they've made, and it was very well. You know, he deserved it. I mean, based on everything, and you look at the conference, I mean.
Well, that's my point. He deserved it.
You look at performance as a coach compared to the rest of the guys in the league. He hasn't won a national championship like Jimbo Fisher has, but after Jimbo Fisher and Nick, you got to think Kirby's the next guy that should be paid. I mean, that's the way it is, and he's right up there.
I mean, yeah, he needs to make Dabo money because he's putting them in the playoffs and in the championship game like Dabo did. So it's fair. And again, to the people I talk to, they look at Clemson as just a holding spot for Dabo Swinney.
Sure.
Everyone thinks, well, as soon as we fire this coach, we're going to go get him. And Clemson is going to have to fend off everybody, but Dabo loves it there. My point being, and you're also in a situation where in the olden days, if you will, all of 5-10 years ago, you had a situation where the big schools felt like they could go in and just pull anybody away because they could throw so much money at them. But we're noticing now there are a lot of these mid-major schools, if you will, who are like, look, we have alumni too. They have big pockets, and we're going to match you dollar for dollar for a coach.
Some of those guys are making – but I can see Dabo being like Coach Bowden. There's a reason Coach Bowden stayed at Florida State. There's a reason Coach Bowden didn't go to the SEC, put Florida State in the ACC. So you got to be really careful about looking somewhere else. And I'm not talking about in general. I'm just talking about specifically Dabo. I mean, pretty much king of the mountain right now in that situation.
He fits there perfectly. But I'm just thinking there are a lot of arrogant people that think, oh, we can go get him from Clemson whenever
Alabama,
we want.
Alabama would probably they think because that. He went to school there. But, I think Nick's going to coach from a rest home. I mean, he'll be out there. He'll be doing that process.
Coaching from the grave. Come on.
He can do it.
Yeah, and you mentioned, this idea of guys, weighing those options and things like that. I think we're in a situation, too, probably more so than I can remember, in the time that I've been watching college football adamantly, where guys are holding out for the right opportunity. Mm-hmm. 3 million versus 4.5 somewhere. If the situation's bad, why? What am I going to do? Why am I going to go sink myself there?
Yeah,
if
I'm Dabo, the second contract is going to be bad.
Exactly. Yeah. If I'm Dabo Swinney, do I really want to follow Nick Saban? No. If I'm anyone, do I really want to follow Nick Saban? No, you don't. You don't want to be the guy after the guy. So it's a tough situation, and I think that I think that coaches, the money is so tight and competitive that it bears them saying, hey, look, hey, we can hold out for a better opportunity.
Well, here's another thing that everybody needs to consider now is with the new tax law that these state universities with the new excise tax, anybody makes $1 million or more, there's a 21% excise tax on all of that money. So if you're making $3 million, then there's 21% extra that the school's got to pay excise tax on. So it's going to be interesting to see how these schools handle all that. And there's going to be a lot of deferred payments and things like that. I saw where Harbaugh up at Michigan, has deferred some of his. So to get, so there's a lot of ways to do that. But I would say, it's going to be some back and forth there. And speaking of Clemson, it's come to the front here about us playing Clemson. And I'm sure that that's a game that we would entertain and they would too. But you got to look at the process here of who we play and who they play. Their big in-state rival is South Carolina. Right. Our big in-state rival is Georgia Tech. We're not going to be in a situation where we play Georgia Tech and Clemson on the road the same year. That's not something we would need to do. Same thing with South Carolina. They're not going to play against Georgia and South Carolina on the road the same year. So the way the schedule sets up, it's very difficult to get that. You look at 20, 21, 22, 23, there's always that problem. So I could see, maybe down the road that's going to happen, but I don't see that happening like some of these people
that's
say
a good point.
In 21, 22 because of the schedule situation. But I do know that Josh Lee, Greg McGarrity, and certainly Kirby running the show would like to play a Power 5 team along with our schedule. The schedule that we have now was set up 4 or 5 years ago, and Kirby had nothing to do with it. But he would love to play some Power 5 teams, home and home in those areas. So, and we're talking some good teams there, and we'll talk about them later on when it becomes a little bit more vivid. But I do feel like behind the scenes they're working very diligently to play those games. And I would say I'm talking a little bit, but I'm talking from the standpoint, you don't go to the game to watch the other team. You go to watch Georgia. So when Georgia's playing, they're playing. So, hey, obviously you'd like to have Ben Hur coming in here every week, but you can't do that. So just be glad that you got a team that's vying for the national championship now. And our schedule, it is what it is. And – that's just the way it is this year. I mean, there's not much you can do about it, but, you know, the conference teams, it's going to be interesting to see. Can Kentucky improve? Can Missouri's defense improve? Can South Carolina find a way to score some points? Is Florida going to really make a difference now with their new coach? You know, our league, what's going to happen to Auburn now with all their changes?
Well, throw into that
on offense and defense.
The mix you're talking about with, you know, Georgia's not going to play Georgia Tech and Clemson on the road the same year. And, you know, when you're trying to bring in those Power Five conferences, remember, you know, every other year you're missing a home game.
Sure.
With the Florida situation.
Right.
So a lot of people.
And everybody wants to go to Florida, go down
exactly.
there. So, I mean,
there's
you can't have your cake and eat it.
Right. Well, I can't.
Or have your, what do we have, patty melt and chicken melt and.
And the catfish press, yeah.
You know, you can't have your Europe Eye. Speaking of, swing out to Europe Eye. I took the wife out there last Friday.
I saw what you ate, too.
Oh, my God, that Southern heat and that academia.
Did you let her have any of it?
Of course not. She's what'd a little
she
woman. She doesn't deserve
it. Did you get that one with prosciutto on it?
Well, yeah, prosciutto.
Hey.
I did not get the peach and prosciutto.
Hey,
prosciutto.
You Italian, man.
Yeah. I went out there and had the Southern Heat and the Academia beer. It was phenomenal. I also had something called something kilt. Some Scottish beer out there that was phenomenal.
Okay.
So, great place, Europe Eye. They had sold out of sandwiches.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's put into you. So
you had
a Southern Heat, my wife.
So you had some pie or something.
Yeah, I had Southern Heat, my favorite pizza out there. My wife had the Ishka, which is phenomenal. You know, they put the olive oil on it, then the fresh mozzarella, the slices of tomato, the basil, toss it in the oven. She was raving about it. So when you get a chance, there are now over 50 locations of your pie. Swing out and hit one of those. You will absolutely love it.
All right, I want to wrap us up here on this last one. I think this is the question that will take us home today.
Let's do it. Bring it home. Round the stretch.
I think you'll really like this one. Andrew Caraway says,
I want you to justify this question. All right, go ahead.
What did you think about John Parker Wilson's comments on the Jocks Roundtable about Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee being a bigger threat to Bama than Kirby at UGA?
Well, you know, John Parker Wilson has a big history of playing at Alabama, and he was involved in high school with Coach Pruitt.
Yep.
Over there at Hoover, and he's got a really good relationship with him. I think all that stuff is just, you know, people want to go give their opinions. I have a very high opinion of Jeremy Pruitt, maybe higher than some of the people here, because I've seen the guy coach. I've seen what he can do, and I know what the other coaches feel about him. That have worked with him, so I think he'll do a good job up there. I do feel like he's got a very tough situation as far as where what he's inherited as compared to what he's got to do with it. So, but you know, if John Parker Wilson's worried about who's going to make him worried the most, then you know, hey, who cares about that? I mean, I worry about every team we play, regardless. I mean, I'm sweating like crazy here about Austin Peay right now. So. I think it's a ridiculous statement, really.
It is a ridiculous statement. And based on this, it's not a shot against Jeremy Pruitt being a bad coach. He is a good coach, you know.
I think he's a great coach. I really do. I think he's one of the top five assistant coaches that I've been around in the last 10 years. And I say Kirby Smart is, too. But and Mike Bobo are right in there, too. So
I don't put him that high. I know he's a good coach.
Look at his results, man. He's doing.
Yeah,
I mean, how many
phenomenal
guys have played for the national championship at two different schools?
How many guys have played at Alabama, coached at Alabama? They play for one all the time. So
yeah, but they went to Florida State where they hadn't won one in a long time.
Yeah.
Hey, we don't need to argue about that. We both feel like he's good, but I think he's a little underrated by some of the Georgia people that really need to know.
And I would be one of those, you know, because
he set the stage here for Kirby, though, in a lot of ways, some of the things that he set up here. I'm not in the defense program for Jeremy.
The one thing I give him is
Kirby Smart, man.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal recruiter. And I think that is Tennessee's biggest weakness, you know. So once he's put together a fantastic staff. I love his staff. I mean, stem to stern, those guys are phenomenal. That is a ridiculously well put together coaching staff. I think John Parker Wilson sees that. He knows they had an energetic, fantastic leader, you know, running that group. They're going to recruit well. But when it comes to, you know, who's the bigger threat to Alabama? Well, yes, Tennessee and Alabama play each other every year. I get that. But I don't see a situation where being with the lack of resources they have in state. I think that is Tennessee's Achilles heel. It used to not matter when Phil Fulmer was there. He was able to get a lot
of guys.
You're
talking about athletic players. You're not talking about resources in the state.
No. The resources, they're going to give them millions, trillions, gazillions of dollars to do whatever they need. But there's just not enough players in the state versus what you have in the state of Georgia. Now, Tennessee's going to come down here. They're going to get a lot of Georgia players.
They'll go to – I think Jeremy Pruitt will continue to recruit Florida well.
He'll take them out of Florida. He's going to take them out of Louisiana. He's going to take them out of North Carolina is going to be their happy hunting ground. I can see that happening. I just think that when it comes head-to-head, the lure of playing for the state university, as Coach Donna says, the G is strong. Jeremy Pruitt is not going to get as many – top players as Kirby Smart is going to get at Georgia. That said, I see Georgia facing off against Alabama more in the SEC Championship than I do Tennessee.
I think it's a question that bears revisiting in about 5 years because that's going to be really – if Jeremy Pruitt's still at Tennessee, then that's when we'll be able to evaluate that question fairly. I could be
very wrong, but I just don't see – I think that Tennessee – and again, going back to when Coach Donald was playing, Tennessee got everybody. Yeah. Florida got everybody. It was tough. Donald, of course, look how many guys he put in the NFL. But now their kid's going to South Carolina. Their kid's going to Clemson. Their kid's going to Auburn. Their kid's going to Kentucky. They're getting some good players. The parity in the recruiting cycle has increased. There's a lot more parity. And so, to me, Georgia's built an advantage of having more kids in-state. No matter how good Kirby is, Jeremy Pruitt is, I don't know that he can overcome Kirby's natural advantage of being the guy from Georgia, coaching Georgia, and doing everything he's done.
That's right. He's got a long way to catch up. Yeah. But.
All right. I got one last one. I got a recruiting question that I wanted to touch on real quick from Kamel Oz. He says, Derek Stingley Jr., Joseph Charleston, Jalen McCullough, Kyle Hamilton, Jeremiah Criddle, all off the board. Things don't look good with Bobby Wolf, Andrew Booth, and Eric Young. Do the following DBs have committable offers, or do they have to camp? DJ Turner, Quentin Newsome, Jalen Phillips, Warren Burrell, Jonathan Mingo, and DeAndre Prince. Mingo is a wide receiver. I don't think that that's a situation. I do think that he's a guy who could commit if he wanted to. He's got a lot of great offers. DeAndre Prince is a guy who really burst onto the scene. Things seem to have slowed on him for a little bit right now. He's a guy that I do think Georgia might accept a commitment from. I don't know that it would hurt him to camp with them as well. Warren Burrell, think he gets a spot if he wants it. Jalen Phillips, he's a kind of a slash guy who can play across that defensive backfield. Took him a long time to get the offer. I think it's a very possible. Newsome and Turner, a little bit more interested in seeing about those guys. Think that they might need to camp, but we'll see about that. So,
how about Tyson Campbell coming here on the 31st too? I left his name out. I really want one of these patty melts for that one.
How about Tyson Campbell running that 10.39 again? That kid has legit week to week speed.
How many more DBs can we take this year? How many would you think?
I will say it seems to me to be the place where they will take the biggest risks. They will be willing to oversign or take more guys than maybe even necessary. I think you're probably shooting for at least 4 to 5. But it won't surprise me.
25% of the class. Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
But that's what they're always
looking
for.
Bad defensive tackles, they'll probably take both. You noticed a lot
of – the idea of 20 would be the max we could take, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. And so when you're taking five of those and probably five defensive tackles, that's going to be an interesting class.
Let's start worrying about all that recruiting now because let's give you something to worry about.
Well, we got a lot to talk about next week when it comes to recruiting. Jake will be on the road to cover the Rivals camp in Nashville. He will also be in Albany earlier in the week to cover the State of Georgia track meet.
Impressive, man.
I will be covering another section of the State of Georgia track meet up in Rome starting Thursday. We will be at Turner Field covering the Georgia Tech baseball game.
Looking for a sweep.
I'm about to say Georgia, hopefully sweeping Tech there. So we got a lot of coverage coming up. Be sure to tune into UGA Sports. It's 27 cents a day. You can't beat that.
Or if you go buy a new Ford out at what's the address? Buy a new Ford, you're going to get
across from Sonic. We'll give you a one-year membership if you go out and buy.
Won't even cost you 27 cents a day, then you can get a
pre-owned one. You let me know that you bought a vehicle out at Athens Ford, and I'll give you a one-year membership to UGASports.com.
I like it.
Speaking of Tyson Campbell, last thought, he ran that 10.39 in a race with Anthony Schwartz, the Auburn wide receiver signee, who ran a 10.07.
Yeah.
That is
all-time record for Florida.
Yeah,
right?
For Florida. I think he's the United States 19-0.
I think he should just go on and run track there. I don't think he should play football.
Well, here's the thing.
Man, take it easy.
When you're playing for
protect yourself, son. You got a chance to make a lot of money. Talk to Bolt about it.
10.07. For that Auburn signing. And then Sean Shivers, is he a 2019 kid?
He was also an 18 signing for Auburn.
Yeah, he ran like a 10.39 too. So, and he's a smaller guy.
He is.
Auburn with a couple of lightning-fast wide receivers and Georgia with a lightning-fast cornerback. And to see Tyson Campbell at his size run that 10.39,
fun.
I wish we had seen that race.
Yeah, that's
we're going to see a lot of great races from the Georgia guys and up this coming week. But, man, that – to see those three guys in the exact same race.
Anybody in Nashville we should be watching for this week?
There's actually quite a few guys up in that Tennessee area, especially in Memphis. Georgia's made a
real
point.
We got the one D lineman that's coming here, right?
Yeah, and they've made a point. I talked to a guy, Omari Thomas, the other day out of Memphis. Big Omari Thomas, 2020
kid.
A guy who's going to really burst onto the scene. They've spent a lot of time out there in Memphis, so I think that's going to be, with Dan Lanning and his connections to that area, I think they're going to make that a focus. And I expect to see some of those guys out at Rivals Camp this weekend.
Good job.
Anyway, that's all the time we have for this week. We want to say thanks to Champions Fried Chicken for letting us come out here and eat all their food,
tacos,
drink
tonight.
All their beer. And tomorrow, come in for that soul food plate. Cornbread.
Oh, yeah.
That cornbread I had last week, that is phenomenal. The jalapeno cornbread.
Wings on Thursday, so Low Country Boil on Friday. Everything starts at 5 p.m.
Thanks to Love and Alive for letting us be on their page, and thanks for sharing it. Thanks to Athens Ford for letting us come out there and mess with their vehicles and take their vehicles and make them look bad when I crash their vehicles. thanks to EuroPie, Academia. Go out to Academia this week, Cable East, and 365 Game Day. And thanks to all of you for watching.
That's it for this episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast. Tune in next week for more Georgia Bulldogs news and notes from Athens.